Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Information Security Forum. Many thanks for listening and sticking with us. And if you're a first-time listener, then congratulations. You've joined just before we make some changes, so you can say you were listening to the original format, just like the Beatles with Sergeant Pepper, or perhaps a more up-to-date reference. Justin Bieber, has he gone through a death metal phase? I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, this is a very special episode because it is the 50th episode. Amazing that they've let us keep going for so long. But anyway, we racked up so many, and huge thanks to everyone who has appeared on the podcast and helped us out. It did start out just as ISF analysts talking to each other, but we've made it much more about members, their journeys, solving problems, and much more about the community and ISF people than ISF staff. And we'll be making it more about those types of issues in the future, hence the big change. But for this episode, we thought we would celebrate the fact that it's the 50th, but also celebrate information security itself. So feel free to join in our celebrations, but please drink responsibly. Some of us are wearing party hats. We have alcohol on standby as well. But yes, please join in. But we will be talking about what's good about this as a profession, the ways it challenges people, helps them grow, and the upside of working in InfoSec. I did ask previous guests of the podcast to send us suggestions, and I've got lots. Some of them will trigger quite a bit of debate, and we'll give you a name check as well to anyone who sent us in some suggestions. And here to help debate just what a great career it is a stellar lineup of guests without whom any celebration would not go off with a bang. Esther, hello, how are you? How do you celebrate? You've got a great hat on as well.
Hi, Mark. Yes, I love celebration, and I've brought a unicorn rainbow hat to really put spirit into things.
Excellent. Good. Love to see that commitment. Patrick, hey up. You've done a couple of podcasts with. How do you celebrate? You're wearing an orange scarf and an orange hat.
Very good. Yes, because we're also playing football, European football at the moment. So and we're still in it, so I'm still allowed to wear this. This is a little bit of a leftover of King's Day as well. And I have a nice champagne glass, but with some home-cooked soda in it.
Okay, excellent.
So no alcohol.
Oh, well, it's earlier in the day for you guys, so I suppose you probably got some things left to do. Whereas Minnie and Paul, hello Paul, what are you celebrating with, Paul?
Ah, booze.
Booze, marvellous.
I've got a bottle of my very own, made by my fans. Ooh. a limited small batch bottle of gin called Insecurity Gin, and this is the 20th anniversary edition, because I did it on my 20th wedding anniversary with my lovely wife. And I've forgotten how strong it is, so if I don't make it to the end of the podcast, I'm really sorry.
I would encourage you to drink a lot and just to see what happens.
No, we're not doing that.
Oh, okay. And also, for the first time on the podcast, is Mike Cartwright. Mike, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Also wearing a party hat. Good to see that commitment. And you've got a sign saying 50 in the background, and just peering at the camera, as a bottle of fizz there as well.
There is, yeah. Yeah, I kind of really pushed the button. I went with the hat, the sign, and the bottle. I got lucky, though, because we had a few landmark birthdays recently in our household, so I managed to kind of plunder what was out there.
All good. It's all grist for our mill. I will now really irritate our audio editor by setting off a party popper. Oh, that hurt.
Whee!
Whee! And also, I have a bottle of...
Whee!
Oh, it didn't pop. Oh, nightmare.
Well, that's disappointing.
However, I do have another one, so... just in case. So to get things started then, just to sort of as a question that or a comment that came up just as we were preparing, which is this a job? Is it a lifestyle? Please debate.
No, it's definitely a lifestyle and definitely not a life sentence. I really like the work, but if you're not in it for the work, for the people and for the things that you learn day by day, you should quit. It's not something you can do 9 to 5 and just cash at the end of the day. That's not an option.
But does it attract the types of people that like that kind of commitment? I don't know. Esther, have you found that? Just that sort of it does claim quite a lot of your time, or is it a sort of that's how you see the world and what it demands of you and you're happy to
attracts the type of people that like protecting something. So I think in a previous podcast, we talked about the superhero syndrome. We attract superheroes, people who want to make a difference in the world, who want to protect something, defend against dark powers, maybe. And I think as far as it being a lifestyle, I completely agree. You can't help but seeing some of the things that you do in your job kind of bleed into real life. If we're talking about assessing risks or seeing dangers or advising people about technology, it does kind of bleed into the rest of your life. That is impossible to avoid if you're working in cybersecurity.
Okay, interesting. Mike, I don't know, as I would call you as a veteran, but I'm not sure if you, that, which is a compliment, by the way. How it's changed, I don't know, has it become more of a lifestyle type thing, or was it always like that?
Definitely it's matured, yeah, and it's changed. I think when I first started, which was 23 years ago or something, it was very much a kind of lonely runner, sort of you're a technical guy shot in a room and you're trying to fix kind of technical issues. And I think the whole thing has matured so much in those years. And I think what I particularly like about it is it's not just a kind of a lifestyle choice for yourself. I think it's something that really matters to wider society these days. And that's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. That's very true. Yeah. Paul, I don't know if you feel the same, just that it's become, it was always good, but it's got better. I don't know.
Cybersecurity. I love it. Equally. Cybersecurity. I hate it. Bottom line is, it is a goddamn roller coaster, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And to be fair, you know, I've been in IT for nearly 30 years. I've been in security leadership for just coming up to 20 years. I'm getting to the point now where where I get the value out is paying it forward. You know, I really enjoy talking to members, especially people who are just starting off, so they don't make all the silly mistakes that I made. And equally, I learn a lot from them as well, because the world has changed, the workforce has changed, attitudes have changed. It's, you know, there's one thing I say all the time. I was saying earlier, I was teasing Mike with this. I found my old framed certificate of one of the first security qualifications I got. This was back in 2008. And when I got that, I'd been 3 years into my first leadership gig and I thought, that's it now. I'm done. I don't need to learn anything else. Yeah. What a load of Horlicks. Every day, every single day is a school day. And this is what I like about working in cybersecurity, is I learn something new every day. You ever come across anybody who thinks they know it all? They haven't. They haven't, and they won't, and they never will. And that's what I like about it. But holy moly, there are some dark days as well.
Well, let's turn away from the dark days. But I wonder if that, are we all like that? Do we all like learning every day? I mean, certainly something that I love about research is just that you get that license to be curious and that time to be curious as well. But for InfoSec, is that the same as well? You're never done with it?
Yeah, 100% the same. You have like also a free license to investigate, to search and to research. Or it's a new vendor that pops up that has something new, or you have some new user behavior that you haven't seen before, or you see a new legislation coming in. Basically, there's something new to enjoy or to fear every day.
You're never sure, I suppose. We like to be perpetually surprised. I don't know, Mike, do you still find that?
I could not agree more. One of the best things about working in security is this kind of, never a dull day, both for the reasons that Paul highlighted that we're not going to dwell on too much, as well as the positives. I think what I really like about working in security is there's always something new. Mm-hmm. There's such a variety of things. And the way that, you know, again, harping back to when, you know, you're just a guy shot in the room being a techie at the beginning to where it is now, there's such a variety of different things you can do in security, such a variety of different kind of careers that you can have. I think that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, just to pick up on that, I think that is a significant point. You know, the breadth of cybersecurity as a community of practice is absolutely vast. You know, you go back 10, 15 years, it was all techies. Yeah, you know, we were all, you know, shoulder deep in big servers and mid-range systems, hiding around in data centers and in basements. But now you've got creative people, you've got artists, you've got literists. You know, we really are a different beast now, and that diversity of skills and capabilities and opportunities just makes it such an exciting place to work. But I do have to say, we still make it quite a confusing and bewildering place or cohort to be in. And we have got to do a little bit more, I think, about extolling the virtues of that breadth of skills and opportunities that do exist in cybersecurity. Because I still think we paint a little bit of a garbled and confusing picture. Might be better in other parts of the world, but certainly from the UK, I think it's still a little bit distorted.
Yeah, I don't think people have a very, because I regularly even now get questions saying, what do you do for a living? And my kids don't know. But quite a bit of me is in them, if you see what I mean. But and I would be amazed if they weren't interested, because, you know, for the same reasons I am. But Ross Johnston from Bupa, I mean, he said something very similar to you, Paul, just that it's the diversity that's changed. He remembers being all stale, male and pale, that kind of stuff. And just now it's so much better because it's not like that. And just that variety of views helps in all kinds of ways, definitely.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's been a couple of stories through my career. I'm sure everybody else is the same, where, you know, I've kind of been called out on my singular view of the world because I wasn't mixing it with colour from the business. You know, one of my best stories was when I worked on the railway and a young lady who worked in internal comms said, yeah, can I help you with your messaging? And we were absolutely getting it wrong. And said, you just got to see the world differently, see it through the business's lens and recognize that everybody's slightly different. You can have one message, but that message needs to be played back in different ways. And absolute game changer. And you know what? That stuck with me and I've never looked back. And as I say in the leadership research, if you want to be a good security leader, but actually, if you want to be a good security practitioner in general, no matter where you are on that ladder, you've got to put yourself in the business shoes and just remember why we're here and just understand the world that we live in, because then you can add the value to it rather than just saying, well, security is the answer. Let's not worry about the question is not the way that it works anymore. Massive change from before.
So Paul, question then from me to you. There's a huge debate on LinkedIn going on that a CISO does not have to have a technical background.
Yep.
So what's your take on that one?
My take on that is that being technical is no longer a barrier to entry into security leadership. I did a podcast at InfoSec, actually, for another media company. It's worth digging out, actually, and I said exactly that. There are CISOs now, security leaders, with very little technical background, no enough, but more business acumen, and coming from a business leadership background, absolutely smashing it in security leadership, because they recognize the importance of that interwoven, that interconnectivity with the business and business outcome and business value. They hire people who understand the technicalities of it. You know, you have a team around you that can do all of that broader job, and putting much more focus on the business outcome and the business value, it builds bridges, Patrick. It absolutely does.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, certainly more true than it was before, because I remember doing the Next Gen CISO paper and sort of going into that. It was very soon after I joined the ISF. So I'd came from journalism, and my main experience of InfoSec was CISOs getting it wrong and being, you know, breaches and just the reports, and just some of it was, there were some really nasty stories that in the couple of years before I left the Beep. And I was thinking, why on earth would anybody want to do that job? And now I think, why wouldn't you want to do that job? My perspective has completely changed, because I think there's, you know, it can be profoundly challenging, but also profoundly satisfying as well.
Well, to be fair, I did have shoulder length hair before I went into security, and that's all fallen out. And I'm absolutely terrified of a phone that rings at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
Yes.
But apart from that, well, yeah, why wouldn't you work in security?
Yeah, I don't know. But do people get that? Or is I wonder as well if we have sort of Stockholm syndrome, and just we're hostages to this fortune, whether people in other industries are the same and think, yeah, it's different every day. Or is there something different about InfoSec, Esther? I don't know. You're one of the newer entrants in this group, I suppose.
Oh, is there something different about? It's a good question. I think I agree with Paul that phone ringing on Friday afternoon is a sentiment that nobody else understands the way that we do.
All right. Oh, fabulous. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you don't want that call. Yeah. That's very true.
No, and I think us having been, have both CISOs and now outside of CISO-ship, I would say, Paul, I don't know how you reflect on that, but it does feel like a burden has fallen off your shoulders a little bit. I think you love the CISO role, you do, but then not stepping out of that role, you're also like, oh, I've got a part of my freedom back. Thank heavens.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a part of me, I miss it sometimes.
Yeah.
And how weird is that? Because when you're in there and the buck stops with you, and you know, things are burning around you, and you're thinking, I wish I'd skilled up as an electrician or a brickie, you know, my life would be so much simpler. Right. When you actually come out of that and you lose the, you know, the practicing role, and you kind of you deflate, and actually you can take a step back and look at the world a little bit better. You know, that is quite nice. But that thrill of the chase. There was there's a gentleman who works for an airline company in the UK. He presented at the UK chapter earlier this week, and he said something about Somebody involved in the organization, when he was dealing with a particular breach, said, well, you should enjoy this. This is what you trained for. And the reality of it is that we kind of do train for the moment when it happens. But when it happens, it's pretty horrible and pretty destabilizing, truth be told. But yeah, I think once you've got it, once you've been bitten by that bug, it kind of never leaves you, really. But, you know, as I say, it's also quite nice to pay it forward and be able to take that 40,000-foot view and try and help security leaders, you know, with their progression, which is, you know, kind of why we've been doing all the leadership research that we've been doing. So we can answer questions like Patrick's one, you know, what are the ratios of technical to business composition to be an effective security leader? Does the CISO need to be on the board? I mean, you know, we'll finish this bottles of gin if we've got to sit and debate that. But these are the kind of things that you've now got a little bit of airtime. You know, Esther and myself can kind of take a step back and say, well, do we? Let's decompose that. Let's challenge the argument and see whether we can unpick this and, you know, help our cohort navigate their way through a problem that may not actually be a problem.
Yeah, Mike, I just wonder if that's for you. Is it sort of that stretching you a bit, solving problems? Is that the attraction?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's some of that there. And that was probably why I got into it in the first place. It was kind of that intellectual curiosity to be able to kind of delve in and get deep into the guts of things. But it pretty quickly changed from being just that to being a much more kind of people social type of thing for me as well. And then actually going back to your Stockholm syndrome point earlier about, you know, is there something special about security and are we just deluding ourselves that it's good? I don't think we are actually, because I think one of the things that I find is special about security is you have that kind of transversal view. So you kind of get to look at everything all the way across the organization. So you get involved with people everywhere in your organization, at least if you're doing it right, you do. And also actually even it's transversal sort of up and down as well, because you transverse from the most junior to the most senior, again, if you're kind of doing it at the top of your game. You have to be able to talk to all those people at those different levels. And boy, that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so being involved and getting that view and just, I think as well, seeing those plans play out as well, and you know that your decisions you've made sort of being taken seriously as well. I mean, just Ross Tanner was on the podcast a few weeks ago talking about recruitment and BISOs, but he said, you know, that's part of what he likes about it is that just that view across the organization and that involvement across those organizations as well. It does touch a lot of things, and I think that's why being a CISO or being a security leader is tough, because it does demand a lot of whoever does that, because you have to be in all those kinds of places. So do you find that, Patrick? Because I think you've been through a merger recently, so I don't know if your responsibilities expanded. I mean, is that a good thing, a bad thing?
The merger is still ongoing, so currently in the same spot, but very excited about the future. What I really like about the job, and that's what Mike already said, is that you touch so many parts of the company, but you can also in a senior leadership position touch somebody's life. So I have a great success story of a trainee coming in, and sadly we needed to say goodbye to her last Thursday because she got a new BISO role with a huge salary uptick and a new outcome. We say, well, I was there when she came in without a degree. She was doing her degree. And I'm really, really, really proud, but also really sad that she left the company. But she got a new position. And that's something for me to celebrate, where I say, well, I was able to touch a trainee's life in that way, giving the right kind of training, the right kind of leadership, and then helping her to progress and even find a better paid job and a better position with a new company. So I'm really happy that happened. So that's for me something to celebrate, and for me also something for Monday morning to be early at my desk pushing forward.
Yeah, there was absolutely echoes comment from Abnor Tahiri, a CISO at Visma, I think, who do a lot of acquisitions and disposals and do a lot of that internal sort of bringing people up to particular levels. Really interesting company. And yeah, the podcast, which he talked about a lot about that, and in the comments said exactly that thing, just that engagement with people and sort of what you're doing and the effect you're having and that sense of achievement as well. I mean, is that another side of this? I mean, I know, Patrick, you've got a lot of qualifications, but I wonder if it's a lot of certifications, sorry, but is there still things for you to learn?
Definitely, because yep. Those certifications are just a gimmick, you know. You're I'm self-employed, And HR recruiters are just scrolling through your resume and they're trying to tick off some of the certifications and that's it. But to be honest, and I don't want to disencourage you to get another certification, Mark, is it's just a certification. It's just learning something from a book that you can Google the next week because nobody's going to ask you about it. Learning is in the interactions with people and looking at your personal leadership and your personal journey. And to be honest, there's nothing about personal leadership or cybersecurity real leadership when it comes to any of those certifications. So, I'm still learning. As many of you know, I'm pursuing a PhD, hopefully in cybersecurity leadership, but especially when it comes to personal leadership. And I think Esther will attest to that, that you can have one or more certifications, but the engagement with people and the joy that you get from that and the learning that you get from these individual relationships is way much better than you can get from any certification out there.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, and this is from us being 10 plus years in the industry, it is becoming a little bit more difficult to continue learning. So I remember in the beginning when I started out my career, I could just, you know, open any book, do any certification, any training, and it would all be new and sparkly to me. And I think once you've been in the industry for a couple of years, I do find I sometimes go to events and I go like, oh, I've heard this before, I've heard this before, I've heard this before. So it is actively trying to seek out what is still new to you and trying to pick that up. So that I would say I love learning, but that is where the challenge I think comes in once you cross that, I don't know where the threshold is, 10 plus years, and you actively have to go and find what you can still learn.
Yeah, but I guess as well as things move on, there are some basic stuff you kind of have to keep up with. But yeah, I think beyond that, yeah, I guess it does become a different kind of thing. But I don't know, Mike, is it as well, do you get a sense of the competence and the kind of, your reach extending beyond your grasp, you sort of know how to solve some problems. And if you're dealing with a customer or another part of the business, you think, yeah, I can fix this. Is it that part of it as well? Just that's also to celebrate just that knowledge that you get.
There is. And actually, but I'm kind of with something Paul said earlier on as well, which is maybe it's just because I'm getting old, but I find the biggest learning now is when I work with younger people. And when you see that they have that different perspective I found that it's really good. And I've had similar experiences to Patrick where I've had some people I've worked with who kind of came in as sort of interns and trainees and I've seen them kind of prosper. Patrick, I think your example that you gave there, the good news is that person who's moved on, you know, she may come back and rejoin you later on because I've seen it can be a little bit like that where people kind of roll around and move around a little bit. But it's generally it's pretty good. I mean, it's. I think the learning, as Esther said, it's hard to kind of sustain in that way where you pick up a book and learn. And I think once you get beyond 10 years, it's not about that anymore at all. It's much more about talking to people and you know, working out what they're up to.
Yeah, yeah. Just to bring in some comments from Florence Berto from AXA. I think he's been on the podcast maybe once or twice, talking about some of the ways in which AXA's recruiting people. And again, trying to get some of those diverse views in, some younger people. I think one of the ways that some of the people they brought in had a very different perspective and just ripped up a lot of the way that they communicate within AXA to make it actually much more, the communications work much better. But she said that just getting those diverse views. But I think she said as well, just that being taken more seriously, just within organizations and I guess across society as well. Just, yeah, there are some, because I certainly remember that writing some of those early stories about computer viruses, they were sort of, teenagers, kids messing about really. And the impact occasionally sort of went over the parapet, but generally it was a nuisance. And it's just gone so far beyond that now. It's sort of lives hang in the balance. I don't know, Paul, I guess that ups the stakes a bit, but is that a thing to celebrate? Is that a good thing?
Well, I'm not sure it is. In the early days of computer viruses, you could kind of liken some of these creative people to graffiti artists. You know, you look at Cascade, Falling Tears, you know, some of those early viruses were all about just kind of making a noise and, ha-ha, got you, and I'm going to scramble your screen up and, you know, make a bit of a nuisance. Very quickly, we realised that these things could be turned as a force to evil. And as the data economy started to increase and we then started down a world of hyperconvergence and hyperconnectivity, and along came the internet. Unfortunately, it stopped being about making a noise, and it was all about being slowly catchy monkey, because actually what you were trying to do was monetize and proliferate and steal and seize control, which turned it into a very, very dark art. But just going back to something that you said earlier, again, at the UK chapter this week, we had a fantastic presentation from Cora Hui of Shell. I'm sure she won't mind me repeating this. Definitely one for a podcast. But how she kind of accidentally stumbled on creating what was a very, very diverse team of different people from different walks of life, you know, different characteristics and traits. And what she realized was that she'd stumbled on something actually really beautiful, because that team and that breadth and the diversity of individuals and personalities and skills was so much easier to connect to the rest of the business, and she never looked back. And it was one of the key takeaways, I think, from the summer conference this week, that we need to dare to be different. You know, Mike and you know, you and I can kind of look across at each other and go back 20 years, and we were all the same people, all looking in the same direction with the same views and the same cookie cutter approach to security. Fast forward to 2024. Art is blended with science. You need that creativity. You need that diversity. And you need to take on board the attitudes and perspectives of the young, of the next generation. And there is a lot to be gained from listening to them, not just saying, oh, they're all lazy and they're just on their phones and they're only interested in likes and subscribe. Well, yeah. That's the future of our planet. So, you know, it's an opportunity here to learn and to listen and to contribute. And, you know, to Patrick's point, you know, if you find a good apprentice and you find a good junior and you coach them through and you see them develop, and then, you know, they go for double the salary. Well, if you love them, set them free. You know, I've been in a similar position, and it's just fantastic to see them go off. And, you know, you check in with them a few years later and they've got successful careers, and you say, I helped, I contributed to that. That makes you feel really good about yourself, you know?
Yeah, it does. But I think there's another challenge here as well, because people here in this podcast, seasoned CISOs, most of them had a team and had people that they could hand off work to. So that's great. But I talk to a lot of CISOs who are just a one-man, let's say, person, army. They need to do it by themselves. So they have a certain background and they're missing all these traits and all these skills. Yeah. And I think they're struggling a lot when it comes to getting those different perspectives, getting, when they come from a technical background, the business process, or the other way around, when you come from a business process, the technical background. And I see them struggling with that. So it would be good if there would be some kind of way we could help those CISOs who are the one-man show, the one-man army, the one-lady army, who need to do it all by themselves. And there are way more of those than the big high-paid CISOs that have a big team. So, Mike, what do you think? Is that something we should address as a community?
That's exactly the space that I came from, really, because most of my sort of head of security type roles, I never actually ever had a CISO role. I was always like information security officer or information security manager or head of information security, that kind of stuff. But I was always in that kind of lonely runner role, as one of my former bosses called it, where, you know, when I started out, it was just like, well, what's security? And everyone would go, well, that's Mike. And it was like, and it's been great for my career in some ways, because I've got this very broad profile, because I had to do everything at some point all the way through. But I think that there's a couple of things that you can do for those guys. And one of them actually just leans heavily to the ISF. There's that safety net of, there's a whole bunch of other people in that same boat, and you can interact with those guys in the back end and kind of get learning and experience and kind of give yourself a leg up with you know, some of the resources and some of the stuff like Mark's worked on and Paul's worked on. The other part, which I've done much more in more recent years, is to try and unlock leveraging the business. So when you're on your own, you have to kind of get more people outside of security to do things for you. So the way that I've worked on unlocking that is trying to kind of enable them to give you what you need, the context that you need to help them and advise them to do the work for you. And that's not easy, but it's doable in some ways. And I think it leans also towards some of the work that Paul's been doing around BISO and all that kind of stuff, where you're kind of interacting much more actively with the business and using them to leverage them to do work for you, as well as just the IT guys, for example.
Yeah. Maybe we need like a dating agency, like a Tinder or whatever it is for CISOs.
Well, we can't go too far.
What would we call it? Esther is shaking her head.
No more drinks for you.
Step away from the bottle, Mr. Ward. Step away.
Well, I almost inevitably knocked the bottle over and it leaked everywhere, so I've got hardly anything to drink. So.
We've kind of got a little bit as well. And, you know, we should take a moment to talk about the power of community, right? And the power of collaboration. Because, you know, I talk to security leaders just the same as you, Patrick. They're the one-person bands and they're trying to do it all their own on their own and they're struggling. And, you know, the communities that you can lean into for help and support, they're there if you want them. They're there. And people, the one thing I like about working in cybersecurity as well is it's not massively territorial and competitive in outer space. You know, you can always find somebody who is willing to jump on a call with you, work a problem with you. And it's, you know, that's one of the things that I really love about working in this industry is that you do feel that you're alone, but you're never really alone. And if you use these communities to your advantage and lean into that support, both on a well-being level, you know, even, you know, before I was at the ISF as a member of the global team, you know, I used to work with a community of CISOs. And, you know, even through the pandemic, you know, come a Friday evening, because, you know, we had a torrid time, or a lot of us had a torrid time through the pandemic. And you could just jump into that community on a Friday afternoon and go, oh, my days, you know, I've had a really challenging, and this has happened and that's happened. And, you know, there were people there who will just commiserate with you and a little bit of banter. And you can just kind of sit there with a drink in your hand and kind of deflate. And by the end of that, you realize that you are actually, you're not alone. And there are other people out there in the same position as you. And the ISF has an important part to play in making sure that we allow those communities to be accessible within our member community as well. And not just in the UK or in the Orange Chapter or Grey or wherever you may be. You know, on a global level, we have security leadership communities. We have communities of people in the GRCA space and so on and so forth. I really encourage people to leverage those. And if you're ever feeling like you're struggling and you need to just reach out, you can pick up the phone to me. You can pick up the phone to Patrick, Mike, anybody else, because, you know, I think that that's such an important part of the job is that we do. As well as supporting our businesses, we have to make sure we're doing everything we can to support each other as well.
Yeah. Do you find that, Esther, you get the support you need as a younger person as it got better? I mean, I would say that because my kids are much more aware of the need to get that good support. So, but I don't know if that's translated into business, the industry yet.
Yeah, I would say well-being is much more recognized as a factor than it used to be before. I've seen that change a lot in the years that I've been active in the industry, where I think before we all knew that, for instance, capabilities like incident response could be very, very tough, particularly going into an incident. And if that lasted for over a day, 2 days, you're going into a week, you see people breaking up and needing support. So I think we were always aware of it. I just think that very important part of addressing well-being is that we've all got the language to talk about it with each other. And that language has become more and more standardized and common. I think had traditionally, of course, we mentioned diversity in this podcast, where we're seeing different types of people in the industry. But traditionally, I think it was also men who maybe weren't as comfortable opening up about feelings and being vulnerable. That, again, has become much more common. So I feel we've really progressed there as an industry and also taken some steps to really say, okay, if you are in incident response, that means that there needs to be time off. That means there needs to be a rotational schedule. So putting in place more controls to actually support that well-being as organizations is very important.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is another control, isn't it? I mean, it's another way.
It's critical.
It's another risk. Yeah.
Absolutely critical.
It's not a risk to manage, guys. Just another risk to manage. On the community point as well. So what I love about the industry is you see this around incident response. If somebody has a breach, that the people around them kind of come together to say, how can we best support you? But I think that's also what I love about zero days. Ironically, of course, whenever there is a zero day as a CISO, you go like, oh, not this again. but for instance, Log4j was a great example where the industry would start compiling all of these applications that then contained Log4j. And so you see everybody working together, regardless of which organization they're in, trying to solve this problem together. And I think there's not too many industries out there where sometimes the people really come together in a form of camaraderie to really solve a problem together.
Yeah, that well-being thing actually as well, it kind of leans back to that, you know, when you're the one-man band CISO. The thing that I learned with maturity and age bit by bit was that it's perfectly okay to say no to stuff. And I think myself and Paul have had this discussion over a beer once or twice where organizations have that expectation that this one guy can secure everything. He's responsible for everything. No, you're not. If they're not giving you more resources to do that, then you are not capable to support, you know, a multinational, you know, £1 million a day earning organization just all on your own, on your shoulders. And they can't expect you to be running at 100% capacity just to run operationally, because yeah, you've got nothing left in the tank for the emergencies. If you're in crisis emergency mode day in, day out, you're going to burn out in no time. So you have to have some downtime, and then you have to try and operate, you know, with a threshold where you can burst into that, because that's part of this job, is that sometimes you need that kind of burst mode where you know, for want of a better word, something hits the fan. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We saw that at the UK chapter. There was some very candid conversations, and I was genuinely surprised at sort of the information that people were willing to share, which is a good thing, because I think, you know, like you say, there's been a lot of tough it out, stiff upper lip type behavior, which doesn't help anybody, because you know, you will fail, and then that has not helped, and you've actually made things worse because someone who's knows the stuff and has the expertise is not there to help. Definitely. But yeah, RT AJ, as well, she was on one of the auditors that was on a few weeks ago. I'm talking about security audit as a career, but she said, yeah, that sort of love and affection across the community as well. And just, but as well, she talked about just how seriously it's being taken across organizations. But has that got some ways to go? I don't know, Paul, do you feel like we've reached peak InfoSec involvement yet, or is there places to go for that with that?
In terms of, in what regard, mate? Sorry.
Well, just sort of, you know, organizations, how they're run. Does InfoSec get the respect it would like or deserves?
Oh, God. Well,
have a few minutes.
I think it's getting, better. You know, organizations are waking up to the fact that they are digitally transformative. They're reading the papers. They're seeing what's happening. Equally, we're dealing with the challenges of desensitization, because so many breaches are now making it to national presses. It's almost becoming accepted as a factor of modern life. So, you know, actually some of the gravitas and impact of some of these incidents is dying away a little bit as well. You know, every organization is built differently in terms of the culture that they sit in, the size of the organization, even the composition of the board and the type of people on the board can make or break the CISO and their team's efficacy at moving the dial. There are so many moving parts. And, you know, this is what I say to CISOs that I mentor. You know, you might go into an organization and nail your 2-year strategy and really, really be able to move the dial. But then you can take that and try and approach that and apply that methodology into another organization and fall flat on your face. And it just really, really strengthens the importance of, when you get into an organization, you know, the first 90 days, the first 100 days aren't really about the security agenda. They're about you listening, learning, putting yourself in the business's shoes and really understanding how you can make a bit of a positive difference. Yeah, of course, put a couple of fires out along the way if you can. But equally, it's all about management of expectations. And the paper that I'm going to release in a week or so's time really, really talks about this. One of the things that security leaders keep saying to me is, Paul, we really, really struggle to manage the ambiguity of our role and the expectations that are placed upon us, because we're not really negotiating what the role should or should not be doing. So I've put a few words of wisdom together as to kind of how that helps. But equally, you just have to recognize that organizations are built differently. So the answer is, Mark, really, it depends. I think we are taken a lot more seriously. Could we be doing more? Absolutely. What we're not doing now, we're not leaning as heavily into the whole leg reg thing and, you know, wandering around waving legislative papers in the air going, you've got to listen to me because this paper is really important. We're now really trying to look at how can we add value to what it is that you're doing. You know, security leaders and security practitioners are recognizing now that they've got to be marketeers. We have to sell the value of what we're doing. You know, they didn't teach us that back in 2005, Mike, when we were doing CISSP. There's nothing in there. There's nothing in there about managing your mental health and your well-being. There are massive gaps in some of these curriculums. And as we're developing as a community of practice, we're realizing, you know, to Patrick's point, you know, that experience is where we're filling in the gaps of what we're learning in CISO school. You know, those qualifications alone will not get you over the line by any means, not anymore.
No, you have to be there at the not, wouldn't be a cold face, would it? But you know what I mean. But I think it's worth celebrating the fact that it's getting better. And that I think as well, a lot of people, I think it's that community-wide realization too, because I've certainly seen that. And that's one of the great things about the ISF, just talking to people, that, you know, there is a lot of common knowledge there, but also just the conversations just kick up all kinds of useful, interesting ideas. I
mean, but it's equally what
passionate crowd as well.
What Esther said is particularly important. You know, there are a lot of people who worked in security who have had some really dark days. But the fact that we said, oh, let's not talk about that. Actually, to her point, we do need to talk about it. And we are talking about it. So, yeah. You know, the whole stiff upper lip mentality of, you know, well, I look across at all of my other CISOs and they're just nailing it and they're tough as old boots and really resilient. Actually, when you lift the lid on it and look inside, we're all as fallible and vulnerable as each other. And now we're acknowledging that and we are recognizing that. Now we can do something about it. So we'll fix ourselves and then we can go on to absolutely smash the security agenda and take ourselves to the next level.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, great things to celebrate. Absolutely. So the community, we're all learning. It's very getting more diverse. That competence as well being taken more seriously. There's huge amounts to celebrate here. So I think, you know, I was going to ask for a show of hands, but that's about
another gin.
Yeah. Yes. So definitely, all of those who have glasses will raise them in to celebrate in a sec. Many thanks to everybody that helped with this episode. And I just wonder what we're going to do for the 100th. Will we get 10 people on the call? I don't know. But anyway, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. You can now find ISF Podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom where you can subscribe, but also you can search on wherever you get your podcasts and look for the Information Security Forum or the Analyst Insight Podcast. The name will change soon, but we'll let you know when that happens. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn much more about ISF research tools and guidance. Thanks for listening.